Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I thought before we got into the meat of the show, I would read a little bit from Contact Report 625, which is a contact that took place on August 15th, 2015, at 5:44 p.m. And it's regarding the Islamic State and ISIS. And Billy goes on a rather long rant or discussion about ISIS, which I will read only just the beginning of. I thought it might be interesting for the listeners to get a little clarity and a little light on what's going on today in the military and in the Middle East. Billy says, but something else, the Islamic State continues to commit ongoing machinations which are felonious and very badly out of control of the good human nature, against which the Iraqi and the Syrian military, as well as the British and U.S. American aircraft squadrons, which are now deployed against IS, do much too little and not the right thing to exterminate the Islamic State. On one hand, many military people and pilots probably enjoy being able to make war, whereby probably love of adventure or joy of killing and destroying play a decisive role. On the other hand, with the entire matter of lax actions against the IS, the participating countries' profit-making plays an extremely important role. This is namely in the form that because through the lax and almost useless munitions wasting battles and machinations of the regular military as well as the foreign air forces who hurl masses of rockets and bombs, the weapon industry, which delivers all the munitions for the fruitless actions against the IS, is kept alive, whereby naturally also the countries themselves profit to a great extent. This is so because they collect immense taxes from the manufacturers of fighter aircraft, weapons, munitions, rockets, bombs. Aside from that, the foreigners, especially the USA, can implant themselves into Iraq, into Syria, into Afghanistan, and recently also into Turkey, and claim they are providing assistance against the Islamic State. In this form, they spread out in the countries concerned, as in the first position the U.S. has always done for ages all over the world, and also will continue to do, whereby it can indulge in its world control imperialism. That is to say, it can increasingly expand its endeavoring and its political, military, and economic areas of might and influence. And as said, the USA stands ahead of all in regard to this. In conscienceless criminal form, for which disdains human life and disregards every right, and indeed in felonious form, and it mendaciously and deceitfully acts as world police and the selfless savior of freedom and of the world, and thereby also does not shy away from underhandedly provoking wars, as it has done worldwide for ages. So indeed also in Vietnam, out of which decade-long murder, killing, raping, torture, destruction, and elimination, as well as unspeakably great need, misery, pain, and sorrow have come forth. At the time, namely, it was the 4th of August, 1964, as I know from your daughter Semyase, as well as from you and Quetzal, about which I have also read something, the U.S. American Secret Service, the NSA, National Security Agency, search for a felonious way to provoke a war against the communist North Vietnam, also North Vietnam in no form had given a reason for war actions. Therefore, in the South China Sea, on the destroyer of the USS Maddox, the NSA manufactured a faulty sonar echo. That is to say, a false sonar echo, in order to let the NSA agents officially act and indeed inform that they had consciously, falsely, and mendaciously presented the harmless and false sonar echo created by them as a torpedo attack of the Viet Cong. All this falsified information, reports, coordinates which arose from that, which were consciously manufactured through lies and deception, proceeded immediately through the news filter of the Secret Service, the NSA, which also manipulated and falsified radio signals, photos, and C-maps, and indeed besides, which on the destroyer of the USS Maddox, they induced an intentionally false and therefore allegedly and effectively invented major combat and torpedo alarm. As a consequence, naturally the warship changed its course, whereby with the heavy turrets of the destroyer opened fire for several hours on the imaginary and non-existent enemy, there was wild shooting across the ocean. Okay, this goes on, and it's talking about the Gulf of Tonkin incident that occurred in Vietnam, which was invented to get us into the Vietnam War. We're in a very deadly situation in the United States. One of the things the Meyer case talks about is that in 2020, we could be looking at a civil war here in the U.S. and the possible collapse of the United States. And Billy learned this in his great trip in 1975. And according to Playaren, the U.S. could come to an end after 2020 if nothing in this country changes for the better by then. And this contact report, which is 544, talks about the decline of our culture, the climbing religion and sectarianism, the criminal activity of our presidents, and the debt, $16 trillion debt, all of this could lead to the collapse of the U.S. So this is something we need to keep looking towards. Another historical trend that is going on right now is corruption in the Vatican. In the media have identified a Vatican Monsignor who was caught red-handed, meaning caught in the act, during a gay and cocaine-induced drug party at his apartment in the Vatican. Monsignor Luigi Capozzi was involved in this wild drug party, and evidently he did so much cocaine he had to be taken to the hospital, and I think this is the second time this has happened. Now, in Contact Report 215 in line 166, it says, the Christian religion will collapse, and the churches and the monasteries will end up in ruins and ashes. Now, I don't know when this is going to happen, but it certainly seems like we're heading that way. Another big thing going on in religion right now is Australia's highest-ranking Roman Catholic clergyman, Vatican Treasurer Cardinal George Pell, has been charged by the Australian police with many historical sexual offenses. There could be as many as 10 alleged victims. I would say there's probably more. There's all kinds of documentaries about Cardinal Pell, and I wonder if I may have one here. Maybe I'll go ahead and play part of this. This is about Cardinal Pell, the cardinal in the Vatican, the treasurer, who has really been accused for decades now of being involved in sexual abuse. So bear with me.
Cardinal Pell has been charged on Sunday charges were today served on Cardinal Pell's legal representatives in Melbourne, and they've been lodged also at the Melbourne Magistrates Court. Cardinal Pell is facing multiple charges in respect to historic sexual offences, and there are multiple complainants relating to those charges. During the course of the investigation in relation to Cardinal Pell, there's been a lot of reporting in the media and a lot of speculation about the process that's been involved in the investigation and also the charging. So for clarity, I want to be perfectly clear. The process and the procedures that have been followed in the charging of Cardinal Pell have been the same that have been applied in a whole range of historical sex offences whenever we investigate them. The fact that he's been charged on summons, we've used advice from the Office of Public Prosecutions, and also that we've engaged with his legal representatives is common and standard practice. So there has been no change in any procedures whatsoever. Cardinal Pell has been treated the same as anyone else in this investigation. Advice was received and sought from the Office of Public Prosecutions. However, ultimately, the choice to charge Cardinal Pell was one that was made by Victoria Police. It's important.
Well, that's one perspective on this. There's also a 60 Minutes that we can listen to part of that talks about Cardinal Pell and his historic child abuse.
Some time to come to grips with this sexual assault issue adequately.
As Archbishop of Melbourne in 1996, Pell established a diocesan commission into sexual abuse.
I would like to make a sincere, unreserved, and public apology.
Pell's process, as it is known, was designed to keep cases out of court. Compensation payouts were capped at $50,000.
And you offered them $50,000.
I offered them nothing. They were free to go into a process which is run by an independent panel. That's from the lawyers after they'd been through the process that they were free to enter.
You're exactly right. It's from the lawyers. Cause Chambers Westgarth.
That's right.
Here, Mr. and Mrs., I won't mention the family name. Mm-hmm. As you know, we act for Archbishop Pell.
Yes.
You offered them 50 grand to be quiet.
I offered them 50 grand in compensation, according to the publicly acknowledged procedures.
And you swear them to secrecy?
Well, we asked them to keep...
You swear them.
There is a requirement that they don't talk about it. Most of them are happy not to.
Okay, this is Cardinal Pell. It's really open and shut as far as I can see, that he's really been historically guilty of all kinds of child abuse for many, many years. So it's very sad. He very well may get off with no action whatsoever. So hopefully we can start to change some of these historical trends. How are we going to change them? Well, the big challenge for all of us, including myself, I do not claim to be a guru or one who has mastered these techniques. I'm just like you, a person learning to try to control his thinking. And the great book that Billy has, it's called The Might of Thoughts. Mach der Gedanken. I'm going through it for the sixth time, I believe. Billy is a 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidt-Ruti. He's about 80 years old. In one of his movies, he claims to have written 50 books, and I think that's probably true. I've also heard from another source over 40 books. So I have only read four of them, and I say four, but the other book, the big book, The Goblet of Truth, I've read major sections in. So there's probably parts of it that I've glossed over. Now, with the book The Might of Thoughts, I have, like I said, I'm going through it for the sixth time, reading it. And the first time that I read this book, I was stunned at how much information there was, and I could tell I wasn't cognitively absorbing it all. So I've gone back over and over and over this many, many times. And the goal here is to gain control over my own thoughts, because the book explains that your thinking eventually results in the circumstances of your life. So if you want to maintain good circumstances in your life or improve the circumstances in your life, the key here is to guide your thinking. And Billy describes the correct thoughts as being neutral, positive, equalized. That means they're positive, but they're not overly positive. They're kind of neutral. And you'll tell when you start to think this way, it's healthy feeling to think this way. If you're too positive, it leads to imbalance, as does negative thoughts. And speaking of negative thoughts, a couple of the things I've jotted down, and these may not be literally what the book says, but just kind of quick notes I've made, which I need to also put on the exopoliticsohio.us site, but I just haven't got around to it. Page 26, whoever has negative thoughts will soon allow himself to be controlled by them. So negative thoughts have a way of multiplying like weeds in a garden. They go out of control. They repeat, repeat, repeat. They damage the psyche. They cause emotional distress. And another a word about emotions. Emotions are a lot like reflexes. They're very reflexive and spontaneous, hard to control. You know when the doctor takes that little rubber mallet and strikes under your knee cap and your leg kicks up? That's what emotions are like. They just suddenly blow forward. I had a bad experience yesterday in a case where I lost my temper. I haven't done that in a long time. But it shows me that I'm still very vulnerable. Even though many other areas of my life are going very well, the thoughts have to be continually monitored, because your thoughts can make you or break you. And you've got unconscious thoughts and conscious thoughts. And the unconscious thoughts create unconscious feelings and have effect on you and power. Your unconscious thoughts have great power. So we have to continually steer our thoughts and also clarify our thoughts. Let me give you some examples of thinking described in pages 200 to 230 or so. Billy says we should be confident, optimistic, relaxed, cheerful, enthusiastic, and thankful. Those six things, if you can remember to tell yourself those six things: I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic. If you can remember these things, I think I left one of them out that time around. But if you can remember those thoughts: I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, that's one I forgot, I'm enthusiastic, and I'm thankful. If you can remember those six things, if you can ingrain those so you can recall them when you feel yourself becoming negative. A lot of times we don't realize it, but we have issues with lack of belief in ourselves, or lack of faith in ourselves, or inferiority complexes that we maybe are not even aware of. And we have to start analyzing our thoughts, because doubt creeps in, anxiety creeps in right away. And when that happens, you need to tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic. Now, how do you convince yourself you're confident if part of you is not confident? Well, you need to clarify to yourself why you're confident. And I'll just give you some things you could say. You'll have to determine which of these things you really want to tell yourself, which of them are true. And you can always work to improve how you feel about these things. For example, you can tell yourself you're confident because you're competent, meaning that you've done your homework, that you know a particular topic. You can tell yourself you're confident because you're an inventive person and you can apply your creativity to a situation very, very easily. These are all examples of how you can use the information in the Mind of Thoughts to benefit your life. I'm going to take a short little break, play some nature sounds, and then we'll pick up in a minute. We're back. We got multiple storylines going here. A few little cat and dog issues in the background to deal with. I am on a day off today, so I'm coming to you at an early time, not a normal time for a show. Been very busy, of course. If you've been listening to the show, you're probably aware of some of the things I've said in terms of that. But in any case, every morning before I have to run off to work, I take the time to read the book, The Mind of Thoughts. And it's a habit. It's a habit that I've developed. I don't know if it would be a good habit for you or not. That's one of the things that you'll find is when your thinking starts to fall into the neutral positive equalizer, you'll start to develop these good habits. On the other hand, if you're not steering your thoughts, if your thoughts are just floating along, just like on top of, you know, on the ocean, you will develop bad habits. Gambling, drugs, addictions, pornography, video games, you name it, overeating. You'll develop all kinds of problems. You have to remember, one important fact is what the human being thinks he makes real. And what you think about yourself, you will become. And you never end in the gutter because of some kind of tyranny. It's all related to your thinking. And you need to plan ahead. You know, you need to take the time to plan ahead so you don't end up in the gutter. And the other thing to keep in mind here is that you have unconscious thought processes which produce unconscious feelings. And also your emotions can create thoughts and your emotions can create feelings. And emotions are these spontaneous, reflexive things. And sometimes your unconscious state can determine your feelings. Drugs can trigger unconscious perceptions. And here's another thing is, and this is something I'm still trying to come to grips with. I mean, there's a lot in this book. I'm still, you know, like I said, I don't claim to be the guru here. Just a person who's just like you trying to learn this material and going through it step by step. It says on page 112 of the Mind of Thoughts, manipulation of the natural state of thoughts shouldn't occur. In other words, thinking only positive should not occur. suppressing feelings should not occur. Now, feelings come slowly over time. Let them play out a little bit. Even if, you know, you think maybe you shouldn't be having certain feelings, let them kind of play out. And maintain your neutral positive. We shouldn't suppress these things. The feelings discharge part of the energy that's pent up in the thoughts. And this is a very, it's a very, very deep topic. It's part of spiritual teachings. You know, when Billy was a young boy growing up in Switzerland, at a very, very young age, even before he met with his extraterrestrial teacher, Svath, even before he met with Svath the first time, he had this very profound experience where he woke up in the middle of the night and crawled out a little window, sat down on a bench, looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he saw an invisible light which he called the love of creation. And at that point, he had this very profound epiphany. And he said, he heard his own voice saying these things. He was only 4 years old. And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And he felt this strange longing for the faraway worlds and the distant places. You see, Billy, his spirit form is what the Meyer material calls the universal prophet. And this may sound way out to some people, but his spirit form is very ancient. All of us have a spirit form. And the spirit form incarnates as different human beings throughout time for the purpose of learning. So your lifetime is for the purpose of learning, to evolve your consciousness. So you need to forgive yourself your mistakes. You also need not to fear death. Because, if the Meyer material is correct, and I think it is, the average human spirit form is 4 million years old. That means you, for the past 4 million years, you've been living and dying and living and dying and living and dying and living and dying. Now, the things from your previous life are intentionally blocked, generally speaking, so you can go on with matters in this life without lying around in a traumatized state by all the difficulties you had in your previous lives. And so that should give you a sense of hope, a sense of progress, because even if you've totally screwed up this life, you're going to get another one. You know, you're going to have another one. All human beings go through these evolutionary steps. There are seven of them. We here on the earth are down in stage two. Most of us are in rational life. The first stage is primitive life. The second stage is rational. The third stage is intelligent. Maybe a few of us are clawing our way up into intelligent life. The fourth stage is real life. The fifth stage is what you might call life and creative wisdom, and creational wisdom. The sixth stage is this half physical, half spiritual state. The seventh stage involves life in a purely spiritual state where we rise up through seven additional planes. It takes like a billion years to go through all this spiritual stage. It takes 40 to 60 million years of incarnations into a physical body in the first five stages, and then about 30 million years roughly, if my memory is correct, that we live in this half physical, half spiritual state. Nobody on earth is in that state. The highest level of achievement on the earth right now is probably just a few people in the stage of intelligence. It's something we should all aspire for, and to achieve that stage, you have to control your thoughts, and you have to overcome your reflexive emotional outbursts. You also have to overcome the tendency of repeating negative, uncontrolled thoughts. So you've learned to harness your good, neutral, positive thinking, and you're starting to have good feelings because of that. And you're starting to develop good habits, and you eventually notice more good circumstances in your life. Now, life has a way of challenging us. So if you're just doing fantastic, stay alert, because the big challenge is coming right around the corner. So before Billy had any contacts with Svath, he had this epiphany one early morning. No one understood what he was talking about when he tried to tell people. He just had to live with this knowledge. Then he had his first sighting close-up of Svath's ship. Billy was told to go out to a certain spot, wait for the craft to land, and it did. Svath never came out during that time. It was about a year later that Svath landed again in his silvery pear-shaped, strange-looking craft. Billy was there. And he was brought up into the ship as if by ghostly hands, this young boy. And they went up in Earth orbit. Now, they did that, I'm assuming, multiple times, because Billy met with Svath and missed many, many days of school. His father would sometimes beat him until he could neither sit nor stand. Svath told Billy, which I thought was very interesting, that in his previous lives, he had been the people that we call today Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad. Now, these prophets had different names in the past. And one of the studies I've done on the show in the past is the origin of the letter J. So all the great people in the past that we think were always named, the names that begin with the letter J, whether it's Julius Caesar or Jesus Christ, that was not their original name in the past. There was no letter J historically. The letter J was invented in about 1550 by a guy named Gian Giorgio Tarissino. Now, this is what a lot of scholars will tell you. Some say it came later. But Gian Giorgio Tarissino was an Italian scholar, a playwright, who invented the letter J. He also invented the letter J, I think, first in German, and it spread to other languages. And what they started to do when they finally got a letter J, and this is 1,500 years after the alleged birth of the person that we call Jesus Christ today. Now, the Meyer material said he was called Emmanuel, and I never believed it, quite honestly. Wasn't sure. You know, I try to keep an open mind about these things, but about a year or two, I went doing research about this, and I found, to my astonishment, that there was no letter J in ancient times. There was no letter J in the Old English. And it wasn't until about 1600s, 1550, that the letter J started to slowly appear. In the 1611 version of the King James Bible, it says, "Our Lord and Savior, IESVS, our Lord and Savior, IESVS. If you look at the historic paintings of the Renaissance that depict the crucifixion, there will be letters up in the very top, which are often INRI, which in the Latin would be translated as Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. He wasn't named Jesus. They did a transliteration, at some point, and came up with the transliteration Iesus. Now, the Meyer information says that his original name was Emmanuel. He's called Emmanuel in, I believe it's Isaiah chapter 7:14. I'm going from memory here, and Matthew 1:23. Now, it says his name is Emmanuel. They don't say his name or his title was Emmanuel. They say his name was Emmanuel. So it's very, very interesting. So this prophet who lived We don't even have his name. Let me jump to a slightly different topic, but related. Because our religions tell us about God the Father, whether you're talking about Christianity or Judaism. And I think the Islamic religion has a slightly different take on that, but not a whole lot different. And maybe the Buddhists are a little closer to reality. Well, the Meyer material tells us that the universal consciousness is this neutral, positive spirit energy that creates universes as a part of its own evolution. And the creation, as it's called, is the spiritual intelligence behind the evolution of our universe. And our universe has been evolving for 46 trillion years. And all of this evolution is related to the evolution of this universal intelligence, which is not human, which is not a personality. A personality, any personality would probably become discouraged after 46 trillion years of evolving and making things. This spiritual energy, this superintelligence, is what's called in the German a Wesenheiten, which means its evolution follows a fixed norm or pattern. It doesn't really have much of a say in the speed at which it evolves when certain things occur in its own evolution. Now, that's different than a Wesen, as we human beings are. We, for example, we can take 40 to 60 million years. We got 20 million years of variation allowed in our evolution. The universal consciousness evolves and goes through specific steps at specific times. In many ways, the analogy that I think of is the gigantic Pacific Ocean, or the gigantic clouds that stretch all across the earth. That's just about as big as my imagination gets sometimes. That's what a Wesenheiten is like. It's not a human. It radiates love. This spiritual energy radiates love, but it doesn't intervene. It doesn't judge you. It doesn't punish us. It doesn't put us in a heaven or a hell. We come back over time in a constant reincarnation, and we evolve these evolutive values like love and patience and compassion. And then we have problems that we have to overcome in our life, challenges like fear, anxiety, our temper, our lack of self-control. That's why we have these multiple lifetimes that occur over and over and over again. And this is the challenge that we go through in life. And I think this material does a great job at arming us so that we can deal with these evolutionary challenges. So the Might of Thoughts book is very, very important. And optimism is one of these great problem solvers. Optimism is hopefulness and confidence about the future. It's optimism about a successful outcome of something. And synonyms for optimism are confidence, hopefulness, cheerfulness. And optimism is a mental attitude. You are in charge of your life. Your good thoughts can create good circumstances in your life. It is the absolute truth. You can control the circumstances of your life. If you're in a difficult situation, you can overcome this difficult situation. It takes assiduousness. It takes stick-to-itiveness. It takes power. And optimism means you're going to face your problems head on, taking active and constructive steps to solve your problems. And optimistic behavior enables a human to see and acknowledge the clear truth even in a difficult situation. Thus, an optimist is not a clown, but the person who, under the greatest pressure, remains hopeful and happy. In defiance of all pressure, he remains hopeful and happy, and he retains the upper hand. Now remember that the negative and the positive are two powers which belong together, and they always work together, so don't try to separate the negative out of your life. The negative is part of your challenge, part of your growth. So if you get badly out of control, don't worry about it. Just forgive yourself and take another step forward. Because that's the reason we're here, to evolve. One of the ways to evolve is through striving. This is a creational natural law. Striving, working. We have to continually work. And that's part of our role here in life, is to continually work at solving our problems. And solving our problems is important because it's related to our evolution. You know, without striving, there is no happiness. There is no happiness in life at all without striving. Well, I'm going to cut our show a little bit short today, and I apologize for that. I hope this has been helpful for you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We've been studying the book called The Might of Thoughts. We talked a little bit about Contact Report 625, and we talked a little bit about the corruption in the Vatican and the historical trends that are going on right now. We'll be coming back to you. Hopefully this weekend we can do a lot of shows on the Meyer information. So stick with it. We're all facing challenges right now. And you are the master of your own destiny. You can improve the circumstances of your life through controlling your thinking and making those thoughts neutral, positive, always. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later.